And we had former Arizona Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords, Gabby, to her friends. She came to Olympia yesterday, testify in favor of a statewide initiative on background checks for all gun sales. Now, of course, you know her story. It's tragic. She was shot in the head at a constituent meeting by a mentally deranged constituent. She was at this hearing with her husband, astronaut Mark Kelly.
Stopping gun violence takes courage. The courage to do what's right. The courage of new ideas.
A year ago, Giffords was a featured guest at the State of the Union as the president pushed gun legislation.
Gabby Giffords deserves a vote.
No such push is expected tonight, so Giffords is buying airtime just before and after the speech with her own message for Congress.
Tell Washington it's too dangerous to wait.
It's the same message she's delivering to state lawmakers, urging them to pass the Background Check Initiative 594.
We must never stop fighting. Fight, fight, fight. Be bold, be courageous. The nation is counting on you.
But opponents, while admiring her courage, say the initiative wouldn't have stopped her shooter because he got the gun after a background check.
But along with the empathy I feel for these victims, I feel disappointment that these tragedies would be exploited to push such a far-reaching anti-gun agenda.
Outside, gun-toting members opposed to the initiative claim it's one stop closer to gun control. And they point to a poster showing Giffords holding a gun.
She's not very anti-gun.
She's
going with the wind.
Mostly hypocritical.
But Mark Kelly fully admits he and Giffords are proud gun owners.
We believe wholly and completely in the Second Amendment.
Now, despite today's large showing, it's likely that the legislature will not act on either of these initiatives, most likely sending it straight to the voters in November. We're live in Olympia, Keith Eldridge, Commonwealth 4 News.
All right. Now, if you were at this hearing yesterday on either side, love to hear your reactions. 206-421-5757. It was by far the most crowded hearing of the year in Olympia. The line snaked all the way down the hallway, out the building. They had an overflow crowd in the House gallery. And there were 46 pages of names to speak. That meant over about 400 people had signed up to speak. Now, they gave Gabrielle Giffords and Mark Kelly 15 minutes to talk. Everybody else got 60 to 90 seconds. And there was, you know, some anger, you know, about that. This was a hearing convened in the House, and, you know, the House chairman can set the rules on this. But if you were at the hearing, would love to hear your take on this. 206-421-5757. That's 421-5757. Outside King County, 1-888-312-5757. That's 1-888-312-5757. You heard Brian Judy from the NRA make what I think is the single most relevant point. Gabrielle Giffords, the shooting of Gabrielle Giffords was an absolute tragedy. My, as you know, I have family down in Arizona, in Tucson. I have been to that Safeway store on Oracle Avenue where this shooting took place. It's a nice outdoor area. She was meeting with constituents. And Jared Loughner, I believe the guy's name is, who's mentally deranged, who had felt dissed by her for no good reason, seemed to have some fixation on her, showed up and just started shooting. Shot her in the face, through the head, and then killed six people. Others, another dozen were wounded. And you might remember this is where there was an attempt to try and blame the shooting on supporters of gun rights, blame the shooting on, you know, a right-wing climate of anger, blame the shooting on Sarah Palin. And it was all just BS. It was a mentally deranged person. It shows the extent to which some people have no shame, no scruples when it comes to exploiting a tragedy for political purposes. So, that said, I understand when a tragedy like that happens, of saying, you know, we got to do something. It's time to take action and do something. But shouldn't the something you do have some relevance to preventing what happened? You know, if we had done this, then that tragedy wouldn't have, there would have been no shooting. If we had done that, well, then there would have been no shooting spree. There is no, what's exasperating to me here is that there's no connection. Jared Loughner got his weapon legally. There are background checks required, and he passed a background check. He didn't go through a shell buyer. He didn't pick it up at a gun show without a background check. He bought the gun legally. So how does a background check narrowing and further restricting gun sales via background checks, how does that change anything? I mean, this seems to me so exploitive. When you bring on an example of something awful and say, this is why we need the background check bill. Well, if a background check law like this had been in place in Arizona, would it have prevented that from happening? No, but we need to do something. Another example where I think the political left just is intent on feeling good rather than doing good. And so when I know why she was here, the initiative 594 is being championed by Nick Hanauer, is actually a friend of mine. Nick Hanauer, a very successful venture capitalist and investor. Liberal Democrat has given tens of millions of dollars to liberal progressive causes, Democratic candidates, and he really feels this issue. And he thinks that this issue is going to tie the NRA and other gun rights groups in knots. And, you know, if it doesn't pass this time, well, they'll just run it again. See, now my take on this is I think that measures like this might actually help the NRA and other gun rights groups get more members. That they'll answer the call and they'll get more donations and they'll get more members. But who knows? My main point here before we get to phone calls is that there is no connection between what happened to Gabby Giffords that day in Arizona and this background check bill. That there's no relevance. And yet it's being treated as, yes, we need to bring her in to drive home the importance of having a bill like this. It is 6:15. You're listening to the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI.
Values and principles. That's our game. This is Talk Radio 570 KVI.
All right, let us get back to your phone calls. John Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. It is 18 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning. Busy day. I'll be talking to Arthur Brooks, American Enterprise Institute, about income inequality here in about 15 minutes on the commute with Carlson. If you're just joining me, a big hearing in Olympia yesterday on guns. There are going to be two initiatives on gun rights, specifically addressing the issue of background checks. One of them's Initiative 594. Stricter checks. One is 591, which says state background checks can't be any more severe than federal checks. That's an overgeneralization, of course, but that's what's going to be on your November ballot. Let's get to your phone calls. George in Fife, hello, how are you?
Good morning, John. Hey, I want to bring something up. It's called HIPAA, the Health Information Protection Act. What this means is that doctors, hospitals, medical professionals, they don't share information with police on people who are insane, clinically insane. So there's no database, no list of these lunatics for background checks to work. The purpose, I think, of these background checks is not really to stop these crazies from acquiring weapons because they need the body count to get more gun laws. I think what it is here and what the law is really about is that if you want to pass down Grandpa's deer rifle to your kid, you're both a felon. That's the real intention of 594. That's the real intention of these background checks.
I tell you what, it's good that you brought this up because Dave Workman from the Second Amendment Foundation and someone who's a journalist in his own right joins me now, and he can fill in the details on this. Dave Workman, welcome to 570 KVI this morning. How are you, sir?
Well, it's always nice to be welcome at 570 at this hour of the morning.
Yeah. Okay, so first question I have is Initiative 594. How restrictive is it when it comes to any background sale or exchange of firearms? Does this fellow have it right that a father or grandfather could not pass on a deer rifle to a relative?
No, I think that there's they'll catch you a little slack there, but the problem that I see with it is what Brian Judy at the NRA mentioned yesterday. It lays the groundwork for building a massive database, especially of handgun owners, and you'll also see expansion into long guns, rifles and shotguns, where there is necessarily going to be an increased database of those transfers as well. And this measure talks about transfers, not purchases,
right,
but transfers. That's John and Dave meeting out at the Snoqualmie Valley Rifle Club, for example, and Dave handing John a firearm to try out and maybe loaning him a gun for a week. You're going to have to go through a background check. And, you know, that's a problem with this measure that simply won't go away. I think yesterday's hearing...
And does this apply to just handguns or all firearms?
All firearms, because this is a what they call a universal background check. You transfer any kind of a firearm, and you've got to start the paperwork.
For any amount of time?
Excuse me?
For any amount of time?
Yeah.
Like, Dave, I really like that hunting rifle. I'm heading out this weekend. I might want to buy it from you. Mind if I borrow it first?
You're screwed.
Really?
Because you can't do it. If this becomes law, you'd have to go through a background check.
Okay, and you say it doesn't apply to relatives, but it applies to just pretty much everybody else?
Yeah. And I think one thing that was pointed out yesterday very well, by the way, by Robin Ball, who is a friend of mine. She runs an indoor gun range
Spokane.
Over in Spokane.
Yeah.
Right. She mentioned how the paperwork problem would be a real headache for firearms retailers who do these transfers. There's a time limit. It extends for 30 days. If she takes a gun in, a used gun, for transfer to somebody else, they've got to hold that gun for 30 days to do a retail check on to see whether the gun is stolen or not. That time period is good for 30 days. If the guy who is going to buy that gun waits until day 31 to come in and try to pick that gun up, they've got to start the whole process over again.
All right, let me ask you about the appearance yesterday of former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords and her husband, astronaut Mark Kelly. Did anyone ask them what I consider the most germane issue, which is, you know, thank you very much for your testimony. What happened to you, Congresswoman Giffords, was absolutely terrible and awful, but the bill you're testifying in favor of would not have prevented what happened to you. So why are you appearing in favor of this bill if it wouldn't have stopped what happened? Did anyone ask that?
No, nobody on the panel asked that, and I never got the chance. After she was finished, she got up, walked out. I had to stay and cover the rest of the hearing. And
was there any questioning at all, friendly or hostile or in between, of Congresswoman Giffords or Mark Kelly?
No, not really. When Brian Judy and Alan Gottlieb, before we heard this at the Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms,
right,
got up to testify, Brian Judy did make a point of noting that I-594, if it was enacted into law, would not have prevented Tucson.
Right. No, we ran that clip. We ran
Jewish Center.
Yeah. We ran that clip. And yes, Cheryl Stumbo, who was injured in that terrible shooting at the Jewish Federation Center, again, another mentally ill man, mm-hmm, who managed to get a firearm, she testified, and this bill wouldn't have prevented her from getting shot either.
That's right.
So, again, I can't quite understand these people showing up to say, we must do something. So, therefore, we need to pass this bill, even though the language in the bill would not have stopped what happened to them.
Well, as I've explained before in print, and you and I have talked about this too, this is trophy legislation. That's really all they're looking for. They want something to put on their mantle to say, hey, we passed this. And one of the other people testifying in support of I-594 said this is a good start. And that's the catchphrase that you always look for. What's the next step then? This is a good start. Well, the next step, according to everybody that I've talked to, would have to be some kind of a registration scheme, because if you don't have gun registration, this background check stuff is really not going to work, because they've got to build the database
to find out who belongs to which gun. I thought the state had a database already.
That's the state handgun registry, and it only applies to handguns that are purchased at retail. If I sold you a handgun, same scenario, you and I are out shooting, and you like my .45, which I know you do, and you decided that you wanted to buy that, right now it would be legal for me to sell you that firearm, and we would not be burdened with this background. That's a private transaction. It's perfectly legal under federal law.
Okay.
And what I-594 wants to do is go beyond federal law right now.
Now, what prevents the straw purchaser, someone who buys a gun with the intent of selling it to someone who isn't a person of good repute and, you know, making money? Like, he buys the gun for $200, he'll sell it to a criminal for $400 and say, well, it's a private transfer, private sale. I don't have to check this guy's background.
Therein lies the problem. That is already illegal. So there's a law against that right now, John. See how well that works? And I-594 really wouldn't prevent anything like that from happening in the future. Most of the transactions in the black market, that's already illegal. Those things are, drug dealers trading guns back and forth for illicit purposes. Trade guns for drugs, trade guns for money. These are stolen firearms a lot of the time. Statistically, it was brought up yesterday that less than 1% of these guns come from gun shows. Most of these transactions involve quote-unquote family members, friends, which are street acquaintances,
the tragedy in Newtown, Connecticut, Adam Lanza got his mom's gun.
Yeah, he murdered her first.
He murdered her and took her gun. Now, listen, while I have you here, I want to squeeze in a topic that has nothing to do with the Washington State initiatives, because we're going to talk about those in more detail. In California, Ruger has stopped selling firearms because of some regulation that was just passed.
Smith & Wesson and Ruger are both in a situation where they're not going to institute micro-stamping as part of their production program.
Okay, what is microstamp? We got about 45 seconds. Exactly what's going on, and could this be the strategy? Yeah. We'll drive you out of our state so you don't sell. We'll just pass this requirement for microstamping.
Well, there is that possibility. That's being batted around by some of the gun rights people that this is some kind of a strategy to drive guns down there. It's not going to drive illegal
what
guns
is it?
Down there. Microstamping is a ostensibly a process by where they inscribe a tiny number on the face of the firing pin and or inside the firing chamber of a semi-automatic rifle or pistol, pistol actually, to determine if they find shell casings at a crime scene. They'll go back and look at this under some kind of a microscope and say, that was bought by Joe Smith.
Okay. It's another form of ballistics. Dave Workman, thanks very much for joining us here.
Now we're talking.